90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Good morning. Hello. Welcome to Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Today, our guest is one of our returning guests, and he was instrumental in helping people win their 2019 property tax assessments. Mr. Preston Smith, who is a partner with Business Information Services, LLC. It's a local business that is instrumental in alerting Jackson County residents on the proposed 2019 property tax increases. And Mr. Smith is coming to us by way of our studio line. Good morning, Preston. How are we doing this morning, sir? Are you here with us?
I'm doing fine, Joseph. Thanks for having me.
Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, gee, I've been self-employed for the last 17 years, where I serve public school districts to help them analyze their demographics to figure out how big their school district needs to be and where they need to put the new buildings. And I actually worked as a news reporter for about 10 years. I spent 5 years on Capitol Hill as a hard news reporter, and then I spent about 10 or 15 years in data analysis.
Preston, Business Information Systems, as you said, helps school districts by using analytics to help organizations forecast future trends. How important is it to use these numbers to make those decisions?
Well, you know, it's a responsible use of public money, because if you have a school district that's just issuing bonds and building schools without any real master plan to know whether or not they actually need it, it can be really a waste of money. And so I work with school districts to try to help them use that money a little bit better.
And as we look at, we've had a troubled history here in Kansas City when they got all the DSEG money and Judge Clark raised the property tax levy and they built all those new schools. But out looking to see now the population in Kansas City has dropped so much that they attend the schools, and then they had to go through selling a lot of schools. So that's the importance of using that data to ensure that you are spending taxpayers' dollars correctly.
Yeah, that's right, Joseph. There's about a half dozen people in the country that do what I do with school districts. So it's exciting. It gives me an opportunity to travel quite a bit and talk to people around the country.
Preston, you are a member of the Blue Springs Board of Equalization. How long have you been a member of the board in Blue Springs?
Well, actually, it's the Jackson County Board of Equalization. Okay. I represent the Blue Springs School District, and I've been there it'll be my 14th year coming up. I'll have the longest tenure on the board right now.
What is the role of the Board of Equalization, and how does it impact those who own real property?
Well, the state of Missouri sets the Board of Equalization up as like a quasi kind of court. It's supposed to really decide a fair and equal value of taxes, because the assessor assesses taxes, and a taxpayer has a right to appear before the board to say, I think the assessor got it wrong. And that's a right that I think is great that Americans have the chance to do. And I mean, I'm there to serve people. I'm there to hear what they have to say. I'm there to be fair, and that's always been my objective.
Preston, it seems like we just went through this back in 2019, and people were opening up their envelopes from the county and getting sticker shock. And here we are again, looking at the same property, the same property tax increases in 2021. What is driving all this?
Well, it's under state law that every 2 years the counties reassess their property, and that's just basically, this is the year to do it. And it's just basically the way the state of Missouri has determined that school districts and many other entities like the library and the fire district, they'll be funded through property taxes. And the only way to do it is to go back and reassess it. And there's really a lot of different methods to do it. there are some bills before the state legislature to even change fairly dramatically about how we could do this. One that I found fairly curious is one from actually a representative out here in Blue Springs, a state representative, that he has a proposal to change our property taxes to something like they have in California. That your taxes will not, your property will not be reassessed until it's sold. And that way, the actual sale price would be what's on the books. That makes a lot of sense. It eliminates a lot of overhead that the assessors, it eliminates a lot of guessing. You don't really have any appeals because it is what it is, what it's sold for on the open market. And, it's an intriguing concept to do that, and they somehow have been able to make it work out there. But the way we do it here in Missouri is that you have a process where the assessor evaluates during the off year when they're not assessing. They're supposed to look at the information of sales and your nearby properties or what your neighbor's property is selling for, and then come back and present to you a number that says, here's what we think your property's worth. And those notices are going to be in the mail, according to the assessors, probably sometime in this next month, in March.
I know, Preston, the BOE, the Board of Equalization, is, like you said, there to help taxpayers, but there to look at, make sure properties are properly assessed. But has the composition of the Board of Equalization changed since the 2019 property tax situation started?
Yes, it has. We've got, they have three permanent members that are appointed by the county executive, Frank White. And they hear every single appeal in the county. Now, I get to vote on the appeals in Blue Springs School District. Those are the only ones I vote on. I can hear the other appeals, but I don't have a vote in those. And that's just the way they set the structure up in Jackson County. Other counties, they may have that structured differently. But for right now, this is the rules that we had to play by. And there was a lady who served, Marilyn Shapiro, and she, amazing job. She served for 13 years or 14 on the board, and just an amazing job. She was fair. She listened to the taxpayers. And they replaced her with the former county administrator, Ed Stoll, who actually had a hand in determining the 2019 assessment, which was a fiasco. And now he's on the Board of Equalization to hear tax appeals for this year. So that's that was the big change, and they have a new chairman. He's an attorney also from Eastern Jackson County, and he's heard some appeals in the last two or three months, not too many. I have no doubt that he'd be fair and upright, but it's a concern that you have that you put a former county employee on the Board of Equalization who actually had a hand in the previous assessment. I think it's a conflict of interest.
It's kind of like going to the meat market telling the butcher you want something, and then he puts his thumb on the scale, and you're like, do you want the meat or not in that situation? But you're in a situation where the person who was selling it to you or helping you or should be helping you could be perceived as not being neutral and unbiased at that point.
That's exactly what you want. You want somebody that's completely unbiased, that has no stake interest in this. And I'm not going to prejudge Mr. Stoll. He may rule very fairly throughout. But the concern is that in the past he had a hand in developing that last assessment in 2019, which was a completely unfair and inequitable throughout most of Jackson County. The state auditor even came back and said that there were some real problems with that assessment.
And I was just going to go to that to talk about that. The state auditor Nicole Galloway issued a report that stated property owners in Jackson County, one of 114 counties in Missouri, had property taxes that were 70% higher than any other county in the state. Can you tell us a little bit about that report?
Well, that is what they found. In fact, that was the lead sentence. It said that the total assessment countywide, it was increased by 19.75% on average, and then the increase was 70% higher than any place else in the state. Now, There's a lot of reasons for that, I think. There's historical that in Jackson County, perhaps the assessments haven't kept pace. And that was the argument that, yeah, we need to catch up. But what happened in 2019, the catch-up all happened pretty much in 1 year. That's where we had the huge sticker shocks. Well, the downfall of the state audit was that it pointed out this problem, but it really didn't point out what caused this 70% higher assessment than any other place in the state. What were some of the issues that came into play, the problems that the lack of analysis or data? And the audit just totally ignored that. And that was a real shortcoming. That's a problem. But here we are going into another assessment this year. I know that the county always had a 6-year plan to try to get assessments much higher. And from what I have seen submitted from Jackson County to the State Tax Commission, they're expecting 30,000 appeals for this year. We had around 20,000 in 2019. We just finished hearing those appeals just a few months ago. I mean, can you imagine making an appeal in like June or July of 2019 and you finally get your case called like in December of 2020? I mean, literally a year and a half later. We had actually people who'd died and made appeals, and their family was trying to carry through that appeal. It was such a long process, but it did take that long. But the county is expecting 30,000 appeals for this year, which tells me that they're expecting some fairly large increases again.
Preston, seeing as that long, were residents given ample notice of when their hearing is going to be? Because, I mean, if in some cases people passed away during that period, you know, when do you know when to expect that hearing?
Well, they're supposed to be informed with postcards, and in some cases those postcards got lost in the mail or were never received. They're tiny little postcards. They're easy to get misplaced. Sometimes folks were called and said, your hearing's coming up next week. Be ready for it at 10 o'clock on Thursday. And sometimes they weren't called. We had several people that we heard the hearings that they were out actually doing errands in a grocery store or a hardware store. And they were called and said, I had no idea you were calling. This is totally a surprise. I mean, just think how you can imagine getting a call a year and a half from now and said, you appealed your taxes. Do you have your documentation now to justify your amount? And you're trying to check out at Hy-Vee. Literally, that happened. And it was bizarre that literally some people were treated that way. At least that was there were some people that were obviously waiting by the phone. They'd been well informed that they knew that it was coming. But then there were others that they just totally forgot that their hearing was coming up or lost track of it or what. But they were just seemed to be caught off guard. So the hearing process, I've got to tell people, the hearing process is difficult. And I'm afraid that in this well, my concern is that the hearings this year in 2021 are going to be a lot tougher than what they were before. I wouldn't say the rules have changed. We've had a couple of state laws passed that should help taxpayers, but that is only if Jackson County abides by the law.
And let me ask this question. Did the state auditor make any recommendations about things that could be done in Jackson County in her report, or was that part not part of the report?
You know, the recommendations that came in the state audit, they're dealt with pretty much like, you need to be more timely in how you sign contracts. You need to be more timely in your reports that are issued to the county. You need to have keep track closer of tax increment financing projects. So the recommendations for the county assessment department were a huge disappointment from the auditor. They were just a huge disappointment because I worked with the state auditors. I talked to them several times. I gave them tons of data. I walked them through why this data was important, and they had just decided to disregard all that.
Preston, you were saying that there were some bills coming through that were in the Missouri legislature this year that could offer some relief for Jackson County property tax owners. Can you tell us a little bit about some of those bills and which ones you see, and is there any hope?
Let's talk first about two provisions that were passed last legislative session that will help the taxpayers this year. Number one is, if there's any increase beyond what the 2019 level was, greater than 15%, it is required that the assessor must physically inspect the property to justify that increase. And the county legislature also passed ordinance that said there must be a physical inspection for anything over 15% increase. Must be. Now, the assessor has indicated in a couple of meetings that I've been in that they plan on just using photographs again and not physically inspecting. This would seem to be a violation of the state law if that's going to be their case. Okay, the other provision of state law that has changed since 2019 is that the county assessor must document and justify whatever increase comes. Because if they're going to just, if the assessor's going to say the increase is 10%, they have to justify that and prove, to provide you the documentation that justifies that increase. And it's within your right to ask for that documentation. They have to provide it. Now, whether or not they provide before your hearing, I don't know. We've had instances where people have asked for this documentation. How'd you get this number? Provide it to me. And to this point, I believe the assessor has not provided that information to anybody. So here again, a state law is all good and well, but unless it's enforced or there's some teeth behind it, you have a county government that may just decide to run roughshod over that. So those are two provisions that has changed since 2019. Is two things that definitely the Representative Eggleston from up around St. Joe, he put those through for us, and it's an amazing thing that he did. So hats off for that. So that's what happened before. There's probably about a half dozen proposals before the legislature this time to do somewhat along the same lines, to put more teeth, more reinforcement of this. But they're still early in the legislature. They're still in committees. They've still got a ways to go yet. Of course, the legislature's still got another couple months to go.
You mentioned something earlier, so just for those large development projects, those apartment buildings, things like that, a lot of those are done with tax incremental financing, and they get property tax abatements. So will these proposed tax increases hurt those owners of those developments, or will this fall squarely on the shoulders of the mom and pops, the senior citizens who bought a house, paid a mortgage for 30 years, now that the mortgage is paid off, will they see more or less the brunt of that, since the developers already have a tax agreement in place for the next 30 years?
Well, so the definition of a tax increment financing is that they get an abatement for most of them for 23 years. And sometimes they're on the book for a very nominal value. And in some cases, those values increase. Sometimes they don't in a reassessment. It all depends on how the TIF agreement's written. So, no, the TIF people that have TIF projects and the developers who have secured those, they're pretty much immune of any kind of increases. The increases that we have in the assessment's going to fall pretty much on the small commercial businesses, people that have residential homes, and that they just don't know how to get the TIF. TIFs are difficult to get. They're a long process, but the reward for that is that they get that abatement for those years.
So one of the things you said, the Jackson County legislature passed a law that states you must have a physical inspection if the increase goes over 15%. But they're looking at not using a physical inspection. They're looking at using pictures. Does that doesn't sound like that meets the criteria for the law that the county passed?
Well, the county or the state. I mean, the state law is very clear. When they wrote it, any increase greater than 15% must have a physical inspection before you're able to increase greater than that. That is the state law. That's the county law. And that is it. The my concern is that in 2019 we had about four or five lawsuits that went forward against the assessment department, and they were all somewhat a little bit different. They had different approaches and angles to them, and all of them were dismissed here in Jackson County. I believe that the counties believe they control the courts. There's a certain bias to the courts in favor of the county government. And they may easily say, in my opinion, okay, forget the state laws. If you think we've done you unjustly, go ahead and sue us. See if you can win. And here in Jackson County, the odds are about 1 in 100 that you could. Or it may even be lower than that. It may be zero. You have to, if you feel like they've done you wrong, you try to sue them. And these were some substantial cases. So one was from the ACLU. They sued the county based on what I think was a clear case of discrimination, of how there was the inner city that was increased such a high rate disproportionately from any place else in the county. And that suit was also dismissed. They heard it in June, dismissed it three or four days after the election in November. Disappointment. But here again, none of the cases even got to the point of presenting evidence. They were pretty well thrown out right from the get-go. The county asked for a dismissal based on without even merits. Just dismiss it, and they had that granted. So if the county does not abide by the state law, I think they could definitely have, okay, go ahead and try to sue us and see what you get away with.
Could that suit be rebrought in federal court? Then it seems like, because if you're, it's kind of like your justice is supposed to be blind and balanced on both party, but for both parties. But if the people that control the courts are the ones who are being impacted, there could be a possibility of self-interest in that situation. And in that case, you know, you would take it out of the state court into the federal court.
Well, Joseph, I mean, that's, in theory, yes, that's the way it should be. But we're talking about a 2019 assessment that's being done unfairly. Now we're 2 years in the rearview mirror, another assessment coming up. I mean, at that point, the courts may say, gee, too much time has passed, or this is moot already. These people, they may have been damaged in 2019, but so it goes. I mean, you would like to be able to think they could readdress a wrong that has been made even 2 years since. But as far as I know, all those suits have died. They've stopped. And I mean, you're dealing with a very tough county government here. And let me tell you, I used to be able to download data for free off their website in 2019. And to get that identical data file today, they want to charge me almost $21,000. I used to be able to just pick the phone up or shoot an email to people in the assessment department and say, can you please send me this data? And now, forget it. I had to file a Session Act request, and even then, they won't act on it. So, no, I think the game plan now among the county is to ignore the to keep people from getting the information, to lock down the data so tight that it's difficult to receive it, and then if you do get it, it'd be only a partial, or if not at all.
So you are a member of the Board of Equalization of Jackson County for Blue Springs, can't even get access to the data for the own area in which you serve to see if the people are being truly assessed accurately or inaccurately.
I mean, like I said, I used to be able to get a mapping file that could download off the internet for free, and now the GIS department wants to charge me $21,000 to get that same identical file.
And that was the same file that was used last year when you helped a lot of people who resided within some of the poorest neighborhoods of Kansas City to show the inequities and injustices about how they were being taxed versus how other neighborhoods and entities were being taxed.
Right. Same data. And just imagine if I go ahead and send the notices out in March and I ask for the data file and say, okay, I see how you've increased countywide. What's been the change? And they say, forget it. You can't have that data file. We're not giving it to you. and that could happen. I mean, the only way that we're going to get an idea of what's happening in this county is that the folks are going to have to, when you get your tax bills, to start contacting your community leaders to try to organize, to get the word out, saying there's thousands of us here that we feel like we've been unjustly taxed. But let me bring up another point, Joseph, and this is a key point, because in 2019, I was very much encouraging people to go ahead and to appeal your taxes, appeal them, because if you've been done wrong, you need to be able to come before the Board of Equalization and try to get a fair shake. From what I've seen, even just the last 6 months, there's been a lot of things that would cause me to say you need to think twice about making an appeal. Because, for example, used to the gold standard, if you had an appraisal done from a certified appraiser, then that was the gold standard. You come before the Board of Equalization, we look at the appraisal and say, okay, fine, the appraisal says this amount, done, no problem. Now that's not the case. The assessor has in the past thrown out appraisals, ignored them, saying that they were done inaccurately. And there's even been folks on the Board of Equalization that's thrown out the appraisals, which, you know, I think that's a slippery slope. But here, you as a homeowner go out and drop $500 or $600 to get an appraisal done. The appraiser knows the properties. They've analyzed the competitive sales. They've done a thorough job. And you come before the Board of Equalization, and they say, nope, we're not accepting that. I have a real problem with that, but that's where we're at now. Okay, so you as a homeowner, you don't want to pay for an appraisal, or if you do and pay one, it doesn't do you any good. What's your alternative? And I can't tell you. I don't know.
We got a caller on line one. It's one of our longtime listeners and a person who was the face of the argument here in Jackson County, Ms. Christine Taylor Butler. Good morning, Ms. Butler. How are you doing this morning, ma'am?
Oh, good morning. I'm like everyone else. We're hanging in there. This is one last piece of stress we didn't need during a pandemic.
What do you think about what you've heard this morning? That it's a different ballgame from 2019.
You know, it doesn't feel like a different ballgame. It doesn't. You know, and I'm going to double down on what I said before. This is a county at war with its own taxpayers. And right before I put in this call, I looked up what I think started it. And I have nothing but disgust for the school board, because I think they're partially behind this push to get more property taxes, was when Country Club Plaza was sold for $660 million. They were assessed at $375,000, and then their lawyers went in and got it valued at $145 million. So think about that. They sell for $660 million, but they get their property tax reduced based on a value of $145 million.
So 25%.
That's even less. Right, right. And so you look at that, and what I'm really concerned about is we have a pandemic where we have millions of people out of work. And we have a mortgage moratorium because there are people who are really struggling right now. And we have a county that looks like it wants to double down on the people who least can afford it. So, you know, and I'll see what the numbers are. But, you know, this is starting to look like a national issue. It's going on in Ohio. It's going on in Michigan. And in every case, the counties are targeting minority and elderly neighborhoods.
Preston, I want to ask a question right quick. Under a new state law, who now has the responsibility to approve a property's value?
It would be the assessor. And we are unlike many other counties in Missouri. Our assessor is appointed. There's only one other assessor in the state that's appointed, and that's in the city of St. Louis. All the other assessors in the state are elected. And until our population breaks around 700,000 or 750, we are not going to have an elected assessor. And I'm, my concern is that over the last year and a half, we've done nothing but lose population in Jackson County. We're not going to get close to having an elected assessor this next time when the census numbers are released in the fall. But no, the assessor has the power. The assessor has almost sole authority to set values. And there's a lot of court precedents that makes it very difficult to fight the assessor and win, which we've seen.
We're going to have to definitely take a short break, and then I want you, if you can both hang on, because I want to go, when I come back from break, I want to ask Preston, what does that term mean by physical inspection? And I know, Christine, you had a physical inspection, so our listeners can understand what they're looking forward. So we're going to take a short break. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Kansas City's community radio station. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And our guest today is Preston Smith, and our caller right now is Christine Taylor-Butler. And we're talking about 2021 property tax increases. Stay tuned right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson hosting Cowtown Conversations. And our guests today are Ms. Christine Taylor-Butler, who was the face. She's our caller right now. And Mr. Preston Smith, owner of Business Information Systems. And we're talking about the 2020 property tax evaluations that are going to be coming up. Preston, you said something earlier. Physical inspection. What is meant by the term physical inspection?
A physical inspection is when someone from the county assessor's department shows up at your house, and they're going to actually look over your property. They're going to bring out a ruler, and they're going to stretch, measure the property dimensions. They're going to measure your house dimensions. They're going to ask to come into your house to measure in every room to make sure they have the square footage correct. They're going to look and see how many bedrooms you've got, whether or not you made any improvements in your kitchen or any updates. They're going to check the outside, look at concrete, the general look of the house. And they're going to get a little much more detailed. I mean, a good physical inspection, from what I've been told, can take up to an hour to do. Now, the bottom line is the county assessor's department does not have that kind of staff to do those kind of physical inspections, and that's why they keep on to rely on these aerial photos and calling it good. But okay, to get a full physical inspection and to do it thoroughly, it takes time. It's not anything that, I mean, you have to be pretty much I wouldn't say licensed, but at least fairly well trained to know what you're looking for and how to do it.
Now, Christine, you had a physical inspection. Can you tell us about the experience?
Gail sent her appraiser to my house. He was here for an hour. We were looking at the property card, which was wrong. It talked about a boiler and, you know, extra square footage. He was at my house taking pictures for an hour. And I pulled out my keys and I said, there is nothing you can't see. You can see anything you want. He took photographs and he says, we made a mistake. And I said, you know, you think? I think I was valued at $600,000. His appraisal came back, I want to say $300,000 less than what they had put on the books. And when I went in front of the BOE, knowing that the value that he had come up with, we had tons of deferred maintenance. This house was never rehabbed right by previous owners. They countered with a value that was only $50,000 less than their original. And I said, that can't possibly be right. It's already been reported in the news what the new value is based on emails Channel 5 got. And the response from Gail's representative is, it's not the condition of her house, it's her location. So I demanded they bring the appraiser up. And the first thing Marilyn asked is, you know, are these your numbers? And he just turned pale. And he said, no, they're not. And then they said, where's your data? And he says, it's down at my desk. And they said, thanks. And then they kind of threw out Gail's numbers. But I also own, or am still paying on, a duplex around the corner that we bought out of foreclosure. It was a wreck. My daughter is living there now, and I said, I called to let her know that Walter was coming to look at the property because it's on the books as a triplex. It's never, ever had a third floor. And while he's on my property, I'm getting a phone call from Gail's office saying my appeal is denied. So it doesn't matter what you do. She was going to do whatever she wanted to do. And so the concern I have is she can't look at pictures. The state law says you cannot look at pictures. You have to actually put boots on the ground. But she put boots on the ground. He wasn't there for his own volition. He was there because she told him to be there. And then she still threw out his number. So I don't know what the game plan is in the county other than they are targeting people who are living on properties developers want.
Wow. So now a lot of our seniors and a lot of people who live in neighborhoods are close to being gentrified are now in a situation to where those property taxes, you know, they've went through 30 years in the neighborhood, they paid it off, they suffered through the high crime, the different things, the problems of the school district, deferred maintenance by the city on broken and cracked sidewalks, and right. Now they're being told that their property is worth $300,000, but if they tried to sell for $300,000, nobody would give it to them. And even if they got an appraisal, it sounds like the appraisal could still fall on deaf ears.
Yes, we're all getting cards all the time and phone calls from people saying, we want to buy your distressed property. They want to pay pennies on the dollar. You know, I'm tempted to have somebody make me an offer so I can come in and say, you know what, this is what someone wants to pay for this house. I am two doors down from a house with more square footage that was flipped with a $400,000 construction loan. And I was given the same square footage, and I was given the same value. And I said, you cannot, but Walter and I talked about that, you can't do regression analysis in an old neighborhood where one house has been completely restored and another one has not. And to go to Preston's issue about the new law that they're looking at that might set it based on sales data, I watched a lawyer walk into the BOE, having bought a building two blocks away, put money into that building to rehab it, and walked out with an assessment less than the price they paid for that house 2 years ago. So if you're a lawyer walking into the DOE, you do really well. But if you're an elderly person who sees your property taxes, for instance, my property taxes, if I had lost my appeal, would be 100% of what I'm eligible to collect in Social Security. Yeah, I'm a senior citizen. 100% of my Social Security payment would be going to property taxes on a house I still have to renovate.
Wow.
Well, Joseph, let me bring a point that I didn't have a chance to bring up earlier. That the reason I'm telling people that the appeals process is a little bit dicier than it was 2 years ago is because there are people that I saw come before the Board of Equalization and suppose their taxes are going up, say, 10%. All right, so then the assessor starts digging into the data, looking at the house, and saying, oh, my goodness, we need to increase you 30%. And they're hit with that number when they show up at the BOE for their hearing. And they're blindsided. They're like, we had no idea. We were prepared for a 10% increase. And the assessor says, oh, no, we're jacking up 30%. And so here it is. I feel sorry for the homeowner. They had no idea this was coming to them. They had asked for maybe the documentation. How'd you get these numbers? The county doesn't give them to them. And so my point is that when you get these tax notices in this next month, unless it is a huge increase, and unless you have a basis to come out and try to prove that they're wrong, I'm telling people you might need to think twice about appealing smaller amounts because they may go up on you when you come to the appeal.
Preston, Kansas City is unique that it is located in Jackson, Clay, Platte, and Cass counties. Will residents in Clay, Platte, and Cass counties see the same type of property taxes increases as those in Jackson County?
Well, I'm not sure they see those across the board, no, because what we saw in Jackson County was unique. In 2019, we'd never seen anything like this before, where you had some parcels, a house go up 150% in value, and the one next door go down 30%. And there was it was very random, haphazard, and it was bizarre. Literally, in the same subdivision, you could have 30 different values on the percentage change. What the assessor has said to the BOE is that she's going to use a trend change this next assessment. I'm not quite sure exactly what that's going to be. The last time was a computer-assisted assessment. Evidently, that's not going to be this time. So maybe this trend assessment is going to be more accurate. Maybe it'll be more fair. I hope so. But I'm not quite sure. I'm going to have to wait and see what the numbers look like when we get it.
Christine, seeing those type of numbers jump on your property evaluations, what does that do to a person who has a mortgage and they've gotten a mortgage because they want a fixed rate to pay every month? How does that impact them? And we're in the midst of a pandemic, and a lot of people right now have lost their jobs. They're barely hanging on to their houses. They're doing modifications. What does that do when, you know, okay, if your property tax goes up 100%, so you go from we'll say $1,500 a year to $3,000 a year, that essentially doubles that property tax portion of your mortgage. And how are people going to afford that?
Oh, let me give you a better example. When we bought this house, it's still a rehab. Its last known rehab was Larry Sells in the 1970s. The property tax was $3,000. We pay about $5,000. When Gail was done, we were looking at $10,000 a year. So, you know, you have to start thinking about, not only are people going to lose their home, but this happened at the same time that the federal government changed the rules so that you are limited on how much of your mortgage and property taxes you can write off on your taxes. So you can't even claim all of that. So we literally have people who are going to lose their homes because they can't make their property taxes. And one of the things I pointed out to Preston was I took a map of where the largest property and tax increases occurred, and they seem to mirror the same neighborhoods who had the largest number of foreclosures for failure to pay property tax. So what Gail was doing, and this is so horrible. I mean, this is a person of color, you know, and our county executive is a person of color, targeted the most marginalized neighborhood for the largest increases. And then we see an email come out saying, well, people can just sell their house and reap the benefits, but the houses aren't worth what she put on the books. You know, even after inspection, they're not worth. So what you have is people who are already on the margins, literally looking at the fact that not only are they going to be kicked out of the houses they paid for all their lives, but they don't have the finances to find another place to go. And the city is giving property tax abatements to $4 billion worth of development. That's Gail's number, not mine. That's what she said to the Hyde Park Neighborhood Association. So none of those buildings is required to have market rate apartments. So you're going to kick people out of their houses who then cannot afford to live in the apartments that are getting the property tax abatements.
Wow, that's all I can say. So it's like the old song is closing time. We don't care where you go, but it's time for you to get out of here. You just got to leave here.
That's what the city and the county is saying is good luck and get out. And there's a point at which we have to start saying these are elected officials, and this is a public crisis. There's literally a pub, but it is not just us. Friends that are in Idaho got their letters on a Friday after work saying the deadline to appeal was 5:00 that day. Cuyahoga County got hit. There are people who have been losing their houses in Detroit, even though the state law says they are not required to pay because the property tax is frozen, and all of that land's being bought up by for-profit developers. So when I go to Home Depot and I buy things to work on my house, I'm paying a sales tax. When Mac Apartment puts things, high-rise buildings up in Hyde Park, they are getting $3 million worth of those sales tax dollars, thanks to Jim Glover, and they don't have to pay sales tax on the materials they buy. Just me and my neighbors. And we are also going to be hit with a streetcar tax. And there's a point at which I have friends who are moving to other communities because we don't even get the school district we're supposed to be paying for. It's absurd that what we're saying is the people who supported the city when it was struggling are no longer the first thing on anybody's mind when it comes time to paying the bills.
I've got to ask this question, Preston. Were the 2019 property tax increases fair for all neighborhoods and residents of the city, of Kansas City?
No, not at all. I mean, the disparity was stark. They had an area of the inner city that the increases were just multiple times so much greater than what they had in Green Valley or Blue Springs. I mean, there's no way that you can convince me that the sales were so much stronger in some of those neighborhoods to justify so much higher increases. And most of those higher increases came on, like, open vacant lots. I mean, literally a lot, for example, that was sold in the land bank for maybe $1,000. And it would come back with an assessment of $53,000. And these people had to go through a year-and-a-half process to appeal that. And that is so bad. And another thing wrong is, say, if you have a mortgage, say your house, you got a mortgage on your house, a lot of these people, as soon as they got the tax notice, their mortgage company started charging the higher rate, escrowing it right away, whether or not they had an appeal or not. And then to go through all the headache of trying to get that reduced, to get refunded from the collector a year and a half later, what a horrible process it was. But no, there was no kind of equity in this, and I analyzed the parcels inside and out by neighborhood. You had a neighborhood like toward the state line that they pretty well skated for free. They had virtually no increases. Then you had the inner city around Prospect and Truce. Oh, my goodness, the increases were astronomical. And near everybody had a triple-digit percentage increase. And I'm hopeful that this next assessment, that won't be the case. Perhaps they learned their lesson. I mean, until I'm able to see the numbers and see the data, you know, maybe, I'm hopeful maybe they learned the lesson 2 years ago and it won't happen again. But I'm telling people that if it does happen again, if they do get those 30,000 appeals they expect, it's going to be just as bad, if not worse, than what we had 2 years ago.
So, Christine, a lot of those neighborhoods and areas that he mentioned are areas where there's a lot of new development, new buildings, home renovations, and the prices are jumping. So that's kind of the term for gentrification, if at its finest, if I can say that.
Well, you know, if you go over to, I can't remember the name of the Beacon Hills. You see $600,000 houses with $8 property tax. $8. And one of the houses I found didn't even bother to pay the $8. The average on those houses is $28. And they're tax abated. And, you know, good for them. You know, they negotiated a deal. Good for them. But my broader concern is a substantial amount of the money is going to the school district. And the school district helped fund the consultant, same consultant that kind of did this to Cuyahoga County in Ohio. Because they were mad about the plaza. But the remaining students in the school district tend to be from those marginalized communities, right? Everybody else who could get out, got out. I took my kids out. So what they did was, at no point did I hear the school district saying, wait a minute, I'm hurting the parents of the kids in the school district. You know, the ones that we're supposed to serve. You know, I don't mind paying for the school district, but you know what? You pay a tax on your car. You pay a tax on your house. But Gail McCann Beatty's office isn't even looking at the sales data for the houses that have recently sold. Start there. start at the houses, that there are clearly tons of construction permits where they're coming in and flipping houses, or where there's a certificate of occupancy. You don't go after the houses that have not done any work on their house in 30, 40 years. And that's why I said a computer model does not work in the inner city. Up on homes, we had a gentleman die a couple of years ago at 100 years old. He and his twin brother, who had died a few years earlier, had never lived in any other house. So other than they upgraded the furnace, the kitchen wasn't rehabbed. You know, it had better appliances, but that house had not been touched in 100 years. That is not the same as someone that comes in and says, you know what, I'm going to buy a similar house down the street, and I'm going to put $400,000 worth of work in it, and I've got granite countertops. I love that Marilyn said, you're being compared to a house that's got a solarium with heated tile floors. Do you have any of that? I said, no, I would love to have that, but I was putting kids through college. So it should be based on what you pay for your house, not what they think you can sell your house for. That's a fairness issue, so that you can plan for your mortgage payment. You can plan for your monthly bills. You can't plan for a bill that jumps $4,000 or $5,000 if you're already living on the margins. There's a fairness issue that these people were asked to pay more in the shadow of high-rise luxury buildings going up, because out-of-state developers are telling the city, we deserve to make a profit.
Preston, as we close out, what are some tips for residents as they prepare for the 2021 property tax notices?
I'd say unless you have a really giant increase of what you had in 2019, don't appeal it, because you'll open that can of worms and it could be just make more problems for yourself. I mean, if you can live with a 10, 12% increase, live with it. Because if you come before the BOE or the assessor when they open up and start researching it, they may double or triple that percentage. I wouldn't have said that 2 years ago, but I'll say it now. That unless you've got a real hardship, unless you really believe that percentage is totally wrong, do not appeal it. And also, if even if they disregard the appraisal, I still think that's a good thing to go. Appraisals are still, I still recognize them in Blue Springs and when I vote. And hopefully there'll be some other folks on the Board of Equalization that will recognize the wisdom and the ability and skill behind these appraisals. So, but please, it could be tough. It could be stressful. It could be a tough tax year. We got through the one in 2019. We did. We'll have to try to get through this one.
I want to thank Christine for calling in and thank Preston for being our guest this morning. We never end Cowtown Conversations without a community minute. The last public budget hearing for Kansas City will be held this Saturday at the Municipal Auditorium, 301 West 13th Street. Doors will open at 8:30 and the hearings are scheduled to run from 9 to noon. Reminder, if you need tax preparation help, call 201 to be connected to a tax preparation center near you. Preparation is free for those who earn less than $57,000 a year. COVID-19 and recent cold weather has increase the number of people who need utility help with their utility bills. If you need help, please call 201 or visit the evergy.com webpage for more information. For Cowtown Conversations, I've been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day. Stay safe. Wear a mask. And join us next week as local attorney Donna C. Watson will be our guest. So stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.
Hello, my name is Marcus Lewis, and this is a KKFI Black History Moment honoring the life of Bill Hughes. Bill Hughes was born in Dallas, Texas, and his family moved to Washington, D.C. when he was 9 years old. Bill Hughes began playing the trombone at the age of 12 or 13 and was performing at Washington jazz venues by the age of 16. One of these venues was the 7T Club, where he performed with saxophonist Frank West. While students at Howard University, Hughes and West played in a band called the Howard Swing Masters. The Swingmasters were one of the several early groups that helped promote the study and performance of jazz at historically black colleges and universities. Although he was interested in playing music, Hughes originally wanted to pursue a career as a pharmacist. He graduated from Howard University School of Pharmacy in 1952 and began working on his career as a pharmacist. His career plans would change the following year when Wes, a member of the Count Basie Orchestra, suggested that Basie invite Hughes to join the band. He was also at the same time asked to join Duke Ellington's band, but however, in September of 1953, he joined the Basie band. He continued to tour and play with Basie and record numerous albums such as Basie, Count Basie Swings, April in Paris, Hall of Fame, 1 o'clock Jump, Basie Meets Bond, Live at the Sands, just to name a few. He retired briefly to help his family and work for the United States Postal Service in 1957, but he rejoined the band back in 1963. He actually took over leadership in the band in 2003 following the death of Grover Mitchell. He toured and led the band up into his retirement September 2010.
Kansas City, you're listening to My Place with your